Grizzly War.
Two young people decided to form their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets. When you see them, you get a nice, secure feeling in your heart.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Sliwa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New York.
Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa. What happened today? Why? And what's next? Live, local, on it. 77 WABC.
I just want to celebrate another day of living. I just want to celebrate another day of life.
Great classic vintage rare earth. As yours truly, Curtis Sliwa, takes you home on the drive home at 5. And we'll be talking healthcare this segment, particularly what the definition is for a condition that is pre-existent. I don't think we've gotten an adequate definition to date. We'll get to that momentarily. But I want to return to Friday because I was in the midst of making a lot of you a lot of moolah shmoolah and schiadol, and you ignored my advice as to who would win the Kentucky Derby out of the 20 horses that broke out of the gate on Saturday. Let me remind you who picked the winner. Put it all on Always Dreaming to finish first. The great Todd Pletcher is the trainer. The great Johnny Velasquez in the Jockeys Hall of Fame from Puerto Rico via the Bronx will be in saddle. Always Dreaming, that's a guarantee. But then the Weisenheimer Rich on his way to Louisville himself, a lifetime horseman. Took issue with me.
Your picks are way off, brother. Always Dreaming. It's in the fifth position. That horse does terrible in cold weather. It's about 52 in change here. Little rain. You got this horse winning, so your hearsay and double hearsay is just bad information. Curtis, I'm trying to help you. I'm trying to plead with you. The winner. You heard it first, ladies and gentlemen, at WABC. It's looking at Lee, number one.
Rich, you're an amateur, aren't you, Rich? Yeah, you couldn't be more hopelessly wrong, Rich. You didn't pick the winner. I picked the winner. After consulting with one of the greatest horsemen to ever walk the back stretch, that's Johnny Legit, and Stable Boy, an illegal alien from Ireland. He's mucked out stalls. He's been a hot walker. He's been a groomer. He's worked all the positions. I don't know if he's going to get deported by the deportation forces of this president, Donald Trump. But they came up with a winning formula, and that meant I made you a lot of moolah shmoolah out there. I told you, raid the kids' college educational trust fund. Go take out a reverse mortgage on your house. And many of you were stunned. You ignored what I had to say, and you didn't make that big payday. But speaking of a payday, a lot of people's resources get depleted when they run into healthcare issues, particularly when it comes to buying insurance and the premiums that go along with it. And we just saw a Trump version get passed through the Republican Majority House on its way to the Senate to replace Obamacare. But when the president, after dancing the horror and the tarantella in victory with the other Republican members of the House, went to the Intrepid to meet with the Prime Minister of Australia, nobody anticipated that he would say this.
Premiums are going to come down very substantially. The deductibles are going to come down. It's going to be fantastic health care. Right now, Obamacare is failing. We have a failing health care. I shouldn't say this to our great gentleman and my friend from Australia, because you have better health care than we do. But we're going to have great health care very soon.
Australia has single payer, like the UK, like Canada, like a lot of other nations. On the line to discuss that, Joseph Antos of the Wilson H. Taylor. Well, actually, he's a Wilson H. Taylor scholar in healthcare and retirement policy. Thanks for joining us on the drive home at 5, Joseph.
Thanks very much, Curtis.
Okay, so that statement that was made on the Intrepid and was buttressed by a tweet that came out over the weekend where the president was insisting that Australia's healthcare, a position, a single-payer policy position, is better than what we have in the United States. Would you say that's true or not true?
I don't think you can make any such comparison. For one thing, it's not health care. They're talking about paying for health care, not health care itself. just because you have insurance doesn't mean you're getting great services, whether it's in the United States or in Australia. In single-payer systems, it seems simpler, but the costs are every bit as high because the cost of healthcare is the cost of healthcare. The big difference is what we pay for that care. We pay more in this country than other developed countries for hospital services, for physician services. We have better access by and large, but we're paying a lot more money. So, you can't have it both ways. You can get more, you pay more. You can get less, you pay less.
All right. So help us, Joseph, with an explanation of what the pre-existing conditions are. Because Democrats have tried to describe it, Republicans have tried to describe it in their ongoing battles to replace Obamacare. But I think the average everyday individual, man or woman out there, is so totally confused after all this discussion. What is a pre-existing condition, and how does it get covered in either the old Obamacare that now has a version passed on by the House that would replace it?
You're absolutely right. There's a lot of hype about this on both sides, and a sensible person ought to be confused. So a pre-existing condition just means that you have sometime in the recent past had an illness that would predict or some status of life, may not necessarily be an illness, that would predict that in the next year or two or three, you're going to be a more expensive customer for an insurance company. Back before the ACA, before the Obama's health reform, insurance companies regularly excluded people, would not sell insurance to people if they had serious pre-existing conditions, such as heart trouble, that sort of thing. Or they would exclude certain kinds of treatments because of those pre-existing conditions, and they also tended to charge people higher premiums. Under the ACA, all that went away, but none of that existed for most of the people in this country. Most of the people in this country get their insurance from their employer, where this was never an issue, or get their insurance from Medicare or Medicaid, which is also not an issue. So this is, it's an important issue for the 25 million people or so out of the 305 million people in the country who are getting their insurance on their own. That's where it matters. But for most people, it's really not a relevant issue at all.
All right. But Joseph Antos, just for the purposes of further explanation, I'm looking at a list of all these pre-existing conditions. And number one on the list, based on the alphabetical spelling, is acne. And when you say that to people, they look at you like, you're kidding. That's a pre-existing condition. How would that sort of fit in the definition that you gave us?
You're reading from some social media post that is not based on analysis or fact. And let's get right to the point.
Sure.
Which is that this Republican bill, there's a lot not to like about the Republican bill. We don't have to get into that. But on pre-existing conditions, anybody who has a pre-existing condition, whether it's acne or something serious, is fully protected because the rules don't change for that person unless they are in a state that decides that they want to take this issue on. And I can virtually guarantee that most states are going to look at this and say, we're going to leave well enough alone. We have enough trouble dealing with these problems. We're not going to take this on. It's hard to imagine that states are going to flock to volunteering to take the responsibility for problems in their health insurance market because the federal government didn't follow through and correct things the way they should have.
And I just want to return to your initial point, Joseph Antos, is that we all want better health care. Americans are living longer, especially in the last 3 years of a typical American's life. That seems to be when most of the health care expenses are expended. If we're living longer and we all want a better quality of life, it almost suggests that no matter whose plan you have, Trump care, Obamacare, or some sort of morphing of the two, that it's going to continue to rise in terms of the cost.
Yeah, I think that's right. Partly, it is partly due to aging. It's also partly due to medical innovation. I mean, one of the things about Americans is that we have come to the conclusion that we should get the best health care from the most expensive places for basically no out-of-pocket costs. In other words, we want something for nothing, and who wouldn't? But it's not practical. It's not a real possibility. But the real push here is the balance between developing new treatments, getting better care, versus being able to pay for it. And it's not an immediate problem. It's a problem for our children and our grandchildren. This is a problem we will be confronting, whether we like it or not, in the coming years. And we're going to have to make some choices here. Right now, it's mostly a Medicare problem, but it's working its way down, and it's going to affect virtually everybody sometime in the future.
Do appreciate that. That's Joseph Antos, a Wilson H. Taylor Scholar in Healthcare and Retirement Policy, a very balanced point of view of what these pre-existing conditions are. I think most Americans, most of our listeners, are not necessarily sure. And just in the fact that no matter whose plan you pick, I can't ever imagine costs or premiums going down.
Curtis Sliwa, the deepest knowledge of the city.
If you're the next mayor of the city of New York.
The Drive at 5, 77 WABC.
Classic Led Zeppelin here, 527 on the Drive Home at 5. And in Saturday's lead editorial in New York's hometown newspaper, The Daily News, the title was No Defense for This, an attack on City Council Speaker Melissa Mark, Viva Libre Puerto Rico, who insisted the taxpayers pony up to provide immigration lawyers for convicted violent felons. But before The Daily News weighed in on this, the person who is rallying people around this scanda o disgrazia is Bob Capano. He's candidate for the New York City Councilmanic seat of the 43rd Council District. He's the Republican, I guess you could say the conservative candidate also. Would I be correct, Bob?
Hopefully I'll be the Republican and conservative candidate.
All right, and your district encompasses what areas of Brooklyn?
The areas of Dyker Heights, Bath Beach, Bay Ridge, and Bensonhurst.
All right, so explain to us what the Speaker of the City Council is trying to do with our tax dollars.
Well, Curtis, let me first say, as you know, unlike many political candidates, I actually work in the real world managing a Gristiti supermarket, and I overhear and talk to thousands of customers a week. And about 10 days ago, I overheard customers, I guess they read a blurb in a newspaper, talking about this and how upset they were. So that forced me to look into this further, and that's when I came out with my statement. And in a nutshell, this city council speaker, Melissa Mark-Verito, I can't say it like you, but she wants to spend $16.4 million for legal services to prevent those who are here illegally and commit felonies, including rape and murder, from deportation. Now look, you know, thankfully she'll be gone next year because we wouldn't get along. She's really bad news, and to me, she's a radical leftist hell-bent on taking our city backwards. So, Curtis, look, I know you're shy about sharing strong opinions, so I apologize if I wasn't politically correct there, but look, she's nuts. She's insane. This is insanity.
All right, but now let me compare that to the mayor's plan. He is spending $16 million of our tax dollars, who he says that money will go to defend illegal aliens who have not committed major crimes when they are facing possible deportation by the federal government. Are you in favor of that plan, that milder plan, or are you opposed to it, Bob Capano?
No, I don't think any taxpayer dollars should be used, you know, but certainly Melissa Mark-Verito's plan is so much worse. And I never thought in a million years I'd be paying Bill de Blasio a compliment. But at least he doesn't want to spend these taxpayer funds on criminals, people convicted of murder and rape. You know, so it's bad enough that the city is spending money to provide legal services to illegal aliens facing deportation, but now they want to take it one step further. So to me, you know, taxpayer money should be used to benefit people who aren't criminals.
All right, but let me ask you this, Bob Capano. You're a candidate to become the next city council person representing Bay Ridge and the other neighborhoods in Brooklyn. There are three Republicans in the city council out of the 51 city council members. Not a lot, but three people who can speak. Why do you think it is that none of them have spoken out like you have? You're a candidate. They're in an elected position. Why do they keep giving this Speaker of the City Council a pass on so many issues?
Curtis, I have no idea. And the only explanation is, I don't know if they're, once you get in there, you become part of a get-along crowd. But you know me well. I'm an adjunct professor. I'm just an ordinary guy making a living and looking to make a difference. I mean, if we're not going to hold the feet, Council Speaker Mark Verito's feet to the fire on an issue like this, then what good is it to have Republicans at City Hall?
There's no doubt. And Bob Capano, I want you to take a pledge that, in fact, if you get elected on the Republican line, or maybe you'll get the conservative line, or even the line that I'm a part of, the New York State Reform Party line, that you are not all of a sudden going to sell out for Lulu's, whoever becomes the next speaker to replace her. And if somebody is misappropriating our money or misspending our money, I expect to see you, Bob Capano, on the front steps of City Hall, blasting them on a regular basis.
Hey, look, I've never been shy, and I'm going to count on you to hold my feet to the fire. If you see me start to become a normal politician, you better call me out.
Do appreciate that. That's Bob Capano. Now, he's just a candidate, ladies and gentlemen. And he's issuing press releases all the time attacking what this city council speaker, Melissa Mark, Viva Libre Puerto Rico, always does in misappropriating our tax dollars. What happens to the three blind mice? The three city council people who consider themselves Republicans, who never say anything, never criticize this speaker, never condemn the speaker. In fact, rarely, if ever, say a negative word about Mayor Comrade de Blasio. He's not my mayor. I didn't vote for him. I guess for some of you, he's your mayor.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
Guardian Angel found a Curtis Sliwa.
Really trying to help our cause.
WABCRadio.com.
They make money. He's got a gold watch. She's got a silk dress and healthy breasts that bounce on his Italian leather sofa.
5:40 on the drive home at 5. You probably never heard of this group, Cake, Italian Leather Sofa, but it so fits our next segue right into the difference, at least for so many people, of what a sofa or a couch is. I know based on what our traffic guy just mentioned, you could use a couch and a sofa down on the platforms of New Jersey Transit or the Long Island Railroad because you're going to be growing barnacles on your backside as a result of signal problems, again, that are going to cause all kinds of delays. But we're not talking mass transit now. We're talking an overall viewpoint, and we're going to Bill Ervolino, columnist for The Record. Thanks for joining us again, Bill, on the drive home at 5.
Thanks for having me, Curtis.
Okay.
I know it's a big story of the day. What's the difference between a sofa and a couch? But people want to know.
Well, not only that, but, you know, I'm looking at you, Bill, and I'm seeing your watch. Because always your picture there. You got the glasses on your head. You got the, you look like a Fordham Baldy there. You look a little bit like the guy on Bob's Furniture Store commercials there.
Let me tell you, I got so sick of people correcting me on this. This is a sofa, this is a couch. I was like, what's the difference? So I looked it up. A sofa comes from the Middle Eastern word suffa, S-U-F-F-A-H, which my friend Goldstein says is a Jewish holiday. I don't believe him. But it's basically a bench with cushions. It's not very comfortable for a nap. It's curvy in the back, blah, blah, blah. But when you go into a store, they never say couch. They always say sofa. Would you like a sofa? Couch is from the French coucher, voulez-vous coucher, which means do you want to lie down? Lie down. Okay? Then there's another one, Davenport. I never even heard of that one. Did you ever hear that? That's like an old...
Davenport?
Old
that's so waspy. Davenport. What is that?
Sounds like a drink. You know, I have two Davenports and a Heineken. But it's an old, old-fashioned one. Now, we had... I grew up with a couch. It was a sectional couch. Okay? It was three parts. My mother had two parts together. Then she had a table in the middle with a little Chinese lamp on it. And then she had another one on the other side. And I went, wait, she says, that's the end table. I said, but it's in the middle. How could it be the end? My father's looking at me like, don't go in there. Don't get started with that. The next thing is the chaise longue. The chaise longue, which, as you can imagine, is French. C-H-I-S-E, long, L-O-N-G-U-E, because it's long, okay? And it's popular in France. And then it comes to this country, and somehow the chaise longue becomes the chaise lounge, L-O-U-N-G-E. I think one of the customs agents was dyslexic or something, probably the same one that screwed up the Godfather's name when he got here. And it became a verb. Lounge became a verb because somebody screwed up the word.
All right. Well, let me ask you this, Bill Orvalino.
Yes.
I've had a number of failed marriages where oftentimes my mate told me, hey, guess what, Curtis? You're sleeping on the couch tonight. They never said the sofa or chaise lounge or that other artsy-fartsy French language you use that I thought we were finished with now that the French presidential election is over, Macron versus Le Pen. But for Americans, it was always, you're going to sleep on the couch.
The couch. Yeah, it's the couch. And I mean, but when you go into a store, if you go into a really like nice furniture store, like if I go in there, I used to get, when I first moved out and I first got my first apartment, I used to get anything I could get, you know. And I go into these like furniture on the go type stores, you know, get something for $300, run out the door with it. But, and you know, your friends would help you. But when you go into a nicer store, because when I got more, the problem was when I would get a nice, comfortable sofa, people would fall asleep on it. I'd have my girl come over, my friend Chickley, she would come over, put a movie on, she'd get down, she'd get comfortable, she has the pillows, she has one of those big bags that everything's in it, she could like live in the desert for 3 months with this bag. She pulls a blanket out, and then she falls asleep. I'm like, what are you doing? She says, oh, it's so comfortable. I said, well, get up, sit up, what are you doing? So finally, when I could afford more, I went to the nice furniture store, and the guy comes over to me, very English, can I help you, you know? I said, yeah, I'd like something expensive and uncomfortable. What have you got? And that's what, and everything, it's got tassels, it's got braids. I don't want all this stuff in my house.
And not only that, but remember, old school was you never threw that couch or that sofa away. You took it to the upholsterer. And the upholsterer would take the guts out, you know, the springs, and it'd be wool all over the place. And then the next thing you know, they'd want to redesign it with slip covers so you'd be hot, you'd be sweaty in the summer, and your skin would be sticking to the Castrol convertible slip covers.
I know, but those were better than the plastic ones. I mean, there's the mythology that all Italian houses had these. We didn't have them. None of the men in my family would have put up with this. My uncle always said, because we went to somebody's house and it's plastic. And my uncle says, if I came home, my wife had plastic on the things, I'd throw her off the bridge. You know, those are the guys that are always like, they're the ones that do whatever the wife says, but they have to like talk big in public. And he's like, they hated it because you would stick to it. It would make noise. And if you were sweaty, it would just like, it would make this noise when you got up. I don't know how people had this on their furniture.
So now, in order, because, you know, Americans are always competing with one another, you know, on the block, in the neighborhood, in your peer group, at work, what should a person call that thing in the middle of their living room that they spend so much time copping a squat on?
I would say, sit on that thing. I'm a couch guy. I'm not a Davenport potato or a sofa potato. I'm a couch potato. That's where I like to sit, and that's what I like to say. And people correct me, whatever, I'm just going to, like, roll my eyes. You know, it's this happened to me years ago with bruschetta. Everybody was saying bruschetta, and I met this Italian chef that I knew, and I studied Italian. And he says, oh, no, it's bruschetta. And I said, oh, yeah, of course, that's what it would be. This is the worst thing that ever happened to me, because then I'm having conversations. I'm like, no, it's bruschetta. I was getting in fights. I was getting fights in restaurants. No, people would turn around from their tables, and that's why you never want to know. Just don't know. Just call it whatever you want.
You wouldn't get into a fight over the melon. you would get into a fight over the pronunciation. It's sort of like the Kosciuszko Bridge or the Kosciuszko Bridge.
Yeah, what happened to Kosciuszko? I really got into that. I that's what I grew up with.
No, no. Hey, Stunat. I'm part Polish, right? It's Kosciuszko. It's not Kosciuszko Mustard or the Kosciuszko Bridge or the Kosciuszko Stop on the J Train in Brooklyn.
I got to go sit on the couch now.
Yeah, now, anyway, ladies and gentlemen, in addition to being a great columnist for the Record, you want to check out Bill Ervolino because, as you can see, he gives you belly laughs. He's got a great sense of humor, and he does stand-up comedy where he schwitzes up on the stage if you don't laugh. So you got to check out Bill Ervolino. He's going to be at Bananas, 7 p.m. this Saturday night in that placebo city in which I never saw anybody come out of their house or get into a car, Hasbrook Heights, where... My memory is there was a place called Boulevard. That's how I called New Jersey Transit back to the Port Authority on Boulevard. But if he's anywhere near as good as he is a columnist, you've got to check him out at Bananas, 7 p.m. this Saturday night in Hasbrook Heights. And if you can't get the hard copy of today's Record, which I am as old school as I love to get the feel of a newspaper, then you got to go online for Bill Ervolino's columns.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
Those who practiced like you.
Deep into the headlines. Deep into the streets.
This is good.
Deep into your eyeballs.
How disgusting.
Studio View is live right now. WABCRadio.com.
Keep it suit up. If you bottles don't want to dance on board, then keep it true up. I'm gangster when I pull my fuerza.
Hip-hop, reggaeton, degenerate monsters. Yeah, this is the theme song of MS-13, the English version. And it sort of sets the tone for what will be a week's worth of reports from our field reporter from Long Island, Jerry Barmash, who joins us now. Thanks for jumping on board here on the Drive Home at 5, Jer.
Oh, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So give us an idea, since your reports are going to run consecutively right here on the Drive Home at 5, what are the aspects of MS-13 that you're reporting about?
Well, last week I was able to patrol with the this group you may have heard of, Guardian Angels. I think I'm pronouncing it correctly.
Yep, yep.
they're going through areas where MS-13 is obviously infiltrated in Brentwood since last September, and also I'm hearing myself back. I had to take the headphones out. In Central Islip, and that's where I went last week with them. And we walked really only a few blocks, but we were there for a couple hours. And that's the 3-part series where we're spending time with the Guardian Angels and how they interact with the public, and how the residents are interacting with them, and how the Guardian Angels are interacting with various people that they come in contact with. And also the leader, as you know, EQ, we profile him one day and how he could have gone the other route and gone into gangs, and how he didn't. And of course, he's on the other side of the tracks, and what that, what he would have, you know, if he had the opportunity, what he would say to, leaders of the, of MS-13.
Now, Jerry Barmash, you've covered a lot of the officials' press conferences about MS-13. What do you think about the fact that they always seem not to be connected to one another? When Sessions came in, it was opposite what the governor, Cuomo, had said, opposite what Ballone, the Suffolk County executive, have said. Why can't they all seem to get on the same page to battle MS-13?
You wonder, one day will that happen? I don't know the answer, but it is frustrating, to say the least.
And from your experience, how powerful has MS-13 become on the beat that you cover in Nassau and Suffolk County?
Well, I can tell you just regarding this series, when you talk to those residents, people walking, people coming out of their homes, people opening their car windows, they're scared, Curtis. They're actually very frightened. You know, even if they don't see it, they know it's there. So they're concerned.
You don't want to miss it. It's a 3-part series by our own field reporter in Long Island, Jerry Barmash, about MS-13 and what can be done to combat them. One of the aspects features the Guardian Angels, because we have gone on the hunt. That's right, we're the hunters. And MS-13 is getting hunted. regardless of what the feds, the state, or the locals refuse to do about them.